In the aftermath of Hurricane Katrina, reports of chaos, rape, murder, even cannibalism swept across New Orleans. Stories that rescue helicopters have been fired on, that the government intentionally blew up parts of the levee system to destroy black neighborhoods, that hundreds drowned awaiting rescue in a warehouse. More than 3 months later, it's clear that terrible things did happen after the hurricane, that some stories remain to be confirmed, and that some of these stories were just rumors. In a moment, we're going to look into one of these rumors in some detail, but our purpose today is not to confirm or debunk specific stories. We want to get inside the process and talk about how rumors start and spread, why we believe them, and how they can be controlled, mechanisms that apply just as well to cell phones give you cancer or satanic propaganda on boxes of laundry detergent. Later in the show, chemical analysts cite lead poisoning as the cause of Ludwig von Beethoven's many ailments and ultimately his death. Beethoven biographer Edmund Morris will join us to discuss what the diagnosis explains and what it doesn't. But first, the anatomy of a rumor. If you have questions about how rumors start and spread, give us a call. Is there a story you believe that later turned out to be false? Did you ever start a rumor? Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. The email address is totn@npr.org. And our first guest is George Palazic. He's a reporter for the Belleville News Democrat in Illinois, and he joins us now from the studios of KWMU, our member station in St. Louis, Missouri. Nice to have you on the program.
Yeah, thank you.
After the hurricane, some media outlets, including a number in the Knight Ridder chain, reported that 22 bodies had been found tied to a single rope near the tiny town of Violet, Louisiana, in St. Bernard Parish, which is east of New Orleans. Where did that story come from?
Well, I first read it when I was in Biloxi a few days after the hurricane, working at the Knight Ridder paper there, the Biloxi Sun-Herald. Mm-hmm. And I just read it like everybody else, and while I was covering stories in Mississippi, I just couldn't stop thinking about 22 people tied to a rope. But after a few days, I didn't see any follow-up stories. I got a little suspicious, and I got to thinking about, you know, how long would the rope have to be to tie 22 people to? It would be over 100 feet. And I got a little suspicious, but I really didn't do anything else until I was reassigned almost 2 months later in early November to New Orleans. Mm-hmm. And I went to... first thing I did really was to go to St. Bernard Parish, which is just east of New Orleans. It's a area of about 70,000 people that was flooded just from one end to the other. And I went to Violet, and just a little town on the corner of a road. And I just asked the first person I saw, did you hear the story about the 22 people on the rope, and where was it, and do you know any of them? And I was just met with answer that this is false, that it isn't true. And I talked to a trucking operator who had brought some new trucks in to replace the ones that were washed out in the storm surge. He'd lived there for 41 years, and he's absolutely certain there was no story like that. So a couple days later, when I'd got through with some other assignments, I ran down the sheriff's spokesperson.
Mm-hmm. And the original story cited Sheriff Jack Stevens as saying that rescuers had found the bodies tied up with rope.
That's true. And I couldn't locate him, but I did find his spokesperson, a captain who was a former TV anchor in the New Orleans area, a very knowledgeable guy. He hadn't actually heard the news stories, but he said there's just no doubt that this story is not true. There were no 22 people found, but he suggested that the person I really needed to talk to was the St. Bernard Parish fire chief. And myself and a photographer ran him down that day. And first words out of his mouth was, it's a hurricane urban myth. And, of course, I wanted to know how it got started. And he spread a map out that showed the locations of the 123 people who were found in St. Bernard Parish. This is exclusive of the ones that were found at the St. Rita's Nursing Home, which were all found together. But except for those, all the others were found just spread out and you know, maybe a couple of people together. And the fire chief said that he believes that the story got started because during the height of the rescue, when it was just after the storm surge hit a particular spot near Violet called the Jumonville subdivision, just a very affluent subdivision, one person who was rescued, a man, said he saw people tied together on a rope. And this is at a time when people are surviving by being boated, really, or wading in through water to the Chalmette High School. I mean, there was more than 2,000 people there with little food or water. It was just a calamity of rescue operations. And there really wasn't much of a way to run down anything. So that story, at least according to the fire chief, just kind of grew and grew. And the number 22 became attached to it. And I believe he said it wasn't until 3 or 4 days later, right around the 5th, when the story was reported, that he was able to, with the coroner, to get to that particular subdivision. And they were thwarted by this really thick mud that's all over the place down there. And they got some bulldozers or end loaders in there to scrape that out. And they found no one there. There were no dead there. And there were just – he feels that the story just grew in the height of the chaos of rescuing people and finding bodies in the parish, which was hit by several walls of water from not only levees that were breached, but also from storm surge from the Gulf.
Mm-hmm. And as you said, I mean, you know, obviously a lot of horrible things were going on there and elsewhere, but if you think about it for a minute, how long does a rope have to be to tie 22 people together? You're right.
About 110 feet. You know, it's bad enough finding the people in the St. Rita's nursing home that were certainly there.
Mm-hmm.
I think that number was 34. It wouldn't take much in the confusion of things for a story to grow and become 22 people on a rope, and that's exactly what happened.
Any thoughts on that number 22? Does it have any special power?
I talked to people who had history or knew the history of St. Bernard Parish, and there was a hurricane in, I believe, at the turn of the century. I think they call it the 1900 hurricane, and somehow that number, some people believed, was associated with that. And there's just speculation, and that's all it is that in the course of the rumor going from one emergency boat, you know, these are just people's recreational boats that have been commandeered,
yeah,
to another, that somehow in somebody's mind, they remembered reading something about that maybe that number 22 was resurrected in the middle of the storm. But that's just a guess.
We're talking today about the anatomy of a rumor, how these stories get started, how they spread, why we believe them. 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Our email address is totn@npr.org. And let's start with Andy. Andy calling from Elk Grove in California.
Hello.
Hello.
You know, my comment has to do with, when I think about a rumor, you know, you think about The Office or about, like, what you're talking about, it going from boat to boat, but once it hits a news agency and it's reported by Associated Press or, you know, Reuters or something, you know, because so many things are hitting the news that apparently don't turn out to be true, it's almost like the perpetuation by the news agencies has lowered news to rumors. Now everything is a rumor, it seems like.
Yeah, it can certainly lower the credibility of news organizations that report such things, George.
Well, I suppose that's true, but if you were to have a list of all the stories that were reported and news that was news stories that were broken, you would see that this is a very small percentage, and it's also the news agencies themselves. I mean, here I am talking about it. You know, I went to find out.
Yeah, it's also, I mean, to be fair, again, there was a quote from the parish sheriff,
sure,
that said it happened.
Exactly, and while the sheriff could not have seen those bodies because they don't exist,
well,
maybe
that's
he believed
the definition
it
of a rumor, right? Someone said something, and then you report what someone said. You're not reporting on what happened. You're reporting on what someone said.
Yeah, no, I'm not going to disagree with you, Andy. It's and it's certainly not the only rumor, as it turned out, that the media ended up reporting, and that's a very broad term, and the media is of varying qualities. But
I guess I still trust the media overall, but I'll say that it's maybe diminished just marginally.
Yeah.
It just seems lately. I don't know if that's you know, consistent across everyone, but that's,
mm-hmm, yeah,
observation.
Andy, thanks very much for the phone call.
Thank you.
And in New Orleans, Georgia, I mean, we've had examples of, I think the police chief there in the city of New Orleans resigned. It's a little unclear as to actually why, but he was involved with telling some things that didn't end up being right. Did you ever get a chance to find this sheriff?
No. I never did. I before the end of my, I think it was a 10-day tenure there, I never was able to run him down. But I felt comfortable after talking to the parish fire chief and to the person who was the in charge of removing the bodies for the federal government DMORT team. He wasn't part of the DMORT team, but he was helping them, that this never occurred. Why it occurred, I think after I wrote my first story that I was actually moving on to another subject.
Mm-hmm. The experiences there, though, again, it would have seemed just as unlikely that people would have been abandoned in a nursing home.
True, but that is absolutely true. Whether they were abandoned or not, I don't know, but they were found there, that's for sure. I did visit the site and was... didn't get very far past the Attorney General inspectors, but I did see it.
Well, George, thanks very much for being with us and helping us figure out at least this one story, which turned out to be a false rumor. We appreciate your time today.
You're welcome.
George Polozic is a reporter for the Belleville News Democrat in Illinois, and he joined us from the studios of KWMU in St. Louis, Missouri. We're talking today, after the break, we're going to continue taking your calls, but we're talking today about the anatomy of a rumor. Why do they start? Why do they get spread? Why do we believe them? If you've ever been involved in, starting a rumor, if you've ever been involved in spreading a story that you're believing a story that later turned out to be untrue, give us a phone call, 800-989-825. That's 800-989-TALK. You can also send us email, totn@npr.org. When we get back from the break, a psychologist tells us why some rumors take hold while others don't. And we'll also be talking with a public health official who will give us some advice on how to stop a rumor if you can. I'm Neil Conan. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're talking about rumors today and rumor control. If you'd like to join us, 800-989-8255, our email address, totn@npr.org. And joining us now is Nick DeFonso, an associate professor of psychology at the Rochester Institute of Technology, where he studies rumors. And he joins us from the studios of member station WXXI in Rochester, New York. Thanks very much for being with us today.
Hi, Neil.
I think you were listening when we listened to George Polozic's story about how one rumor from Hurricane Katrina started and got spread. Does that sound typical to you in some ways?
It sounds very interesting. It sounds typical. I would diagnose that rumor as being motivated by a desire to enhance a relationship with the people that you tell it with. It sounds like a rumor that got started, sounded like something that could be plausible, and then it was said for effect. The people that told it more or less as a good story, and that's how it got exaggerated.
It's the line that comes after, it's been so bad that.
Exactly.
Uh-huh. There were a lot of these stories in Hurricane Katrina. Is that to be expected in such a dramatic event?
Well, I think that in hurricanes or cataclysms or catastrophes or earthquakes like this, there's always a great deal of rumors in the aftermath. There's a great deal of anxiety. There's a great deal of uncertainty. Communication networks have broken down. People have a need to know information. And that's not there. Formal sources of information, especially in the Katrina situation, as you well know, the mm-hmm. telephone lines are out. Cell phone lines were out. People were isolated. And so these rumors sort of percolated about and became much more exaggerated than they normally would in, say, other situations, which tend to produce extremely accurate rumors. But natural disaster rumors tend to be extremely inaccurate.
There was a set of rumors. I've seen studies that said there were different rumors in white and black communities in New Orleans.
That doesn't surprise me at all. Rumors migrate about, and their details change to suit the characteristics of the group within which they're migrating. So, in some in white communities, for example, a rumor about a person doing a dastardly act, the perpetrator would be black and the victim would be white, and in a black community it would be just the reverse.
Yet there's also a suggestion that in the white community, they were filling racial stereotypes in some ways. The white community was saying there were people there acting like animals and different variations of that story, and the black community saying they were out to get us, blowing up the levees, allowing those people in that warehouse to drown.
That's correct. And one force especially active in rumors that cannot be checked, as in these situations, one force that acts is that they tend to agree with these stereotypes, these well-learned negative, mostly negative stereotypes that are resident in the people within which they circulate.
And does that suggest at least a part of the reason why we believe the rumors, because they match our stereotypes?
Absolutely. The very first reason that people will believe a rumor is because it agrees with an attitude. A stereotype is one kind of attitude or one form of attitude. Mm-hmm. And it agrees with our currently held attitude that we have. Another is that it comes from a credible spokesperson. I believe we had that kind of situation here in the Katrina rumors. And thirdly, it's heard repeatedly. And there may have been instances in which it was heard repeatedly. And fourthly, it's not rebutted. People don't hear a rebuttal of any kind.
Is there a distinction between what we're talking about, rumors and urban legend?
I've made a distinction between rumor and urban legend, although there are some nebulous forms. Rumor is unverified information that people circulate in order to make sense of an unclear situation or to deal with a possible threat, whereas urban legends are more like tall tales. They're longer narratives with setting, plot, climax, and a denouement, and they often teach a moral to the tale, a morality tale, as it were. They're interesting stories to tell around a campfire or to your office mate.
And would a conspiracy theory, where would that fit in on the spectrum?
A conspiracy theory, if it has some specific examples, I tend to classify it more as a rumor, although depending upon the conspiracy theory, it might be a nebulous form.
Mm-hmm. Let's get another caller on the line. Eddie. Eddie's calling us from Fernando, Mississippi.
Yes, that's right.
Hello, go ahead, please.
I'm a pastor in a church that would be classified as a right-wing Christian church. We have rumors that circulate among the churches that pastors have to deal with all the time. And for instance, the one about the soap company that supports the First Church of Satan and talking about the symbols on their products.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, these things are handed out in conferences when you go to them. And then one that's very common that comes up year after year is one that says that there's a Senate bill. It even has a number attached to it that's being looked at that will prohibit the broadcasting of Christian programs over public airwaves. And when this comes out, when this rumor starts up about every 6 months, people will come to church with petitions that somebody handed them at work, and they'll want everybody to sign it and send it in. And pastors find themselves almost overwhelmed sometimes just trying to get people to believe the truth and not believe the myths.
Huh. Nick DeFonso, that repetitive element, that cyclical element almost, is that a feature of some rumors?
Some rumors are what we call diving rumors. They come back again and again. That particular rumor, the first one that Eddie talked about, actually happened to know a lot about. I was hired by that soap company in a lawsuit, a series of lawsuits, which because they tried to stop the rumor by suing people that were spreading the rumor.
Mm-hmm.
And he's absolutely correct. It did come back every few years, although we hope that it has died down. That other rumor that he talked about the Federal Communications Commission, or the supposed act by an atheist to produce a bill in Congress that would ban religious broadcasting. Both of those rumors, by the way, are absolutely false. Apparently, reportedly, there's been 20 to 30 million phone calls over the past 20 years to the FCC related to that rumor.
So you might want to investigate the phone companies, the origin of the rumor, since they seem to be making some money out of it.
A pecuniary motive, that's right.
Yeah, follow the money.
I would mention, though, in some research that we're doing funded by the National Science Foundation, that we're very interested in rumors like this and other rumors that callers like Eddie produce and the whole gamut of rumors. And if any of your listeners have a rumor that they're dealing with or have dealt with, we're very interested in hearing their story. If they would like to do a survey at rumorexpert.com, we'll be using that data to find out more information about rumors.
Eddie, thanks very much for the call, and good luck with your rumor control there.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Joining us now to talk about a separate type of rumor is Jeff Steyer, his associate director for the American Council on Science and Health in response to many untrue rumors about public health. He joins us from the studios of Westwood One in New York City. Nice to have you on the program today.
Hi, Neil. Thanks for having me on.
I guess public health rumors, there's an underlying fear of getting sick, dying.
There is. There are especially fears about cancers and food and things that you can't see, things that you can't control. People are scared of those things, and you can understand why, but the problem is that these public health scares aren't always in the public health's best interest.
Mm-hmm. Of course, there are things we can't see that can hurt us, and we ought to be looking out for those and washing our hands a lot and that sort of thing. But, a lot of these rumors never seem to be conclusively quelled. I mean, for example, resurrections of the allegation that artificial sweeteners cause a host of illnesses.
That's a classic rumor, and it's also completely untrue. That leads me into some of the classic signs of these rumors and how to identify them. People want to know, is this true? Should I believe it or shouldn't I believe it? And we at the American Council on Science and Health have boiled them down to a few hallmark signs of a internet health rumor. Some of those include the fact that the only place that you see it is in your email box. And if that's the case, if you only see it in your email, there's probably a reason for that, because you on radio and people on TV have producers, newspapers have editors. They're gatekeepers, and it's hard to get rumors past all the gatekeepers. So if you're only seeing it in your email, there's a reason for that. Mm. If it says forward this to everyone you know, it's usually a sign that it's a rumor that they need help circulating. If you see lots of exclamation marks, I read the New England Journal of Medicine. You don't see exclamation marks in the New England Journal of Medicine.
Not a lot,
mainstream.
No.
And they don't tell you to photocopy this page and mail it to people. Rumors need help because they don't have facts behind them. They need help perpetuating themselves. And another one that you often see is what I would call attached credibility. It'll be an email in this NutraSweet aspartame scare. Rumor is typical of that. It'll come and say, the email will come into your inbox and say something along the lines of, I got this from my cousin and she's a nurse, so she really knows what she's talking about. And they attach credibility to someone that they know. In fact, I've talked to people and asked people, why did you send this to me? And they say, well, I got it from a friend of mine, and it's a very trustworthy person. And sometimes I'll try to trace back to that person and say, you sent this along and people trust you. Why did you send it? And they said, oh, I just thought it was interesting. And these are how these things spread. People think there's no downside, but in fact, often and sometimes there is. And one example of a downside of these scares is at the American Council on Science and Health, people know to call us if they want to find the difference between a real health threat and health hype. And we got a phone call from an elderly woman in Florida who did not use email herself, but her friends who sat with her at the pool did get email. They're emailing with their grandchildren. Mm-hmm. And this woman drank a lot of diet soda. And they said to her, you drink a lot of diet soda. We heard that this aspartame stuff causes multiple sclerosis, which is completely untrue, but it's a pretty scary thing.
Yep.
So she decided to stop drinking her Diet Coke, and she switched to regular soda, which was a problem for her because she was a diabetic. So these scares actually can have negative impacts. In addition, they distract us from, as you said, the real things. There are lots of things we can do to protect our health. But listening to these health rumors is not one of them.
Here's an email we got from Jackson in Basalt, Colorado. Who started the rumor that fluoride in drinking water is bad for people? My local community has banned the use of fluoride in drinking water. I know of several dentists who are quite happy that they have more work to do compared to communities that do have fluoride in their water. How has this been such a persistent and pernicious rumor that's even gone on to change community decisions? Website that I've looked at have no decent scientific rationale for supporting the bans, and yet they continue.
Well, that's such an important question because one of the greatest public health advances we made in the last century is adding fluoride to water. Now, when you tell people, if you were to take a poll right now and say, would you like the government to add a chemical to the public water supply supposedly to make you healthier, most people understandably might say no. But at the levels at which the fluoride is added is quite beneficial to our dental health. So people hear things that the government is doing to improve your health, and I could understand why they get skeptical. You know, one of the other signs of one of the rumors is if the email says, you know, this is the corollary to the fact the only place you see it is an email. The corollary is the reason you're only seeing it here is because they don't want you to know about it, whoever they might be. That's been such a successful way of spreading misinformation that it's been incorporated into the title of one of the most popular selling books this year about things that they don't want you to know. Of course, that book is also is full of rumor and innuendo and not based on science.
We're talking about rumors today. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's get well, here's another email. This is from John in Cincinnati. I recently received a forward of a news item from the BBC regarding a pack of killer squirrels that attacked and ate a dog in a far eastern Russian city. The source was called Russian Media. I sent it to friends in Moscow who told me that it came from a newspaper so notorious for making up the facts or the equivalent of our supermarket tabloids. I shudder to think that the Weekly World News is a source of seriously reported stories in other countries. And Nick DeFonso, I guess the Internet plays a part in all of this now.
Definitely. The Internet makes us all much more connected. And so if I spread a bit of funny information, killer squirrel information, then I'm able to spread it far and wide.
Getting back to science rumors, Jeff Steyer, you know, some things that I guess started out as unsubstantiated or as rumors, you know, cigarettes can cause cancer, it turned out to be true.
Well, talk about things that you really can do to improve your health is to quit smoking or never to start. But I don't know if I would put cigarettes in that category of it just being a rumor, because there is substantiated medical literature. Now, early on, there was a period of time before the medical literature that it was just a rumor, and that's the challenge we have in science, which is
stunt your growth is what I think I heard back in those days.
Well, you know, there were people who opposed cigarette smoking because they just thought it was a dirty, ugly habit, and they, you know, there were religious activists who were against it. And at that point, there was only rumor behind it. Now, certainly that doesn't mean to say you shouldn't listen to people who tell you to stop smoking. But the bottom line here is we have to differentiate based on the information that we have available to us today and make rational decisions based on the best available information. And we have to come to terms with the fact that we don't always have all of the information we'd like to have, but we have to go on making sensible decisions each and every day. And sometimes the decision is not to use a product, but sometimes the alternative of not using a product is more dangerous. Saw in the news today that Microsoft decided to stop using PVC plastics. Plastics have become a big rumor mill lately that plastics are all dangerous. And the fact is they aren't. But now Microsoft stopped using plastics out of concern for certain types of plastic, PVC, because their customers are upset by it. And some activist groups have been pressuring them to stop. Now, we have to be able to differentiate between the real risks and the hypothetical ones. And I don't think we're always doing a good job in this country about doing it. There are real things that we can focus on, quitting smoking, wearing helmets, helmets even made of plastics, and doing things like wearing seatbelts and exercising, things that we can do to improve our health. And we're being distracted by these sometimes silly scares. And it's really when you forward these scares to your friends, you may think it's amusing. You're probably hurting somebody's legitimate business. You're probably taking away safe and useful product from other consumers. And you're distracting the rest of us from things that we can do to protect our and improve our health.
Jeff Steyer, thanks very much for being with us today.
Thank you.
Jeff Steyer, Associate Director for the American Council on Science and Health, and he joined us from the studios of Westwood One in New York City. We're talking today about rumors. Here's another email that we got, this from Mark. I once started a rumor. The owner of the local comic book store was a real jerk, ripping people off constantly, refusing to pay his employees, and so forth. So one day, I told somebody he had herpes and promptly forgot about it. 2 years later, somebody I didn't know told me the same thing. Mark's conclusion, justice at last. We'll take more of your calls about rumors, how they get started, why we believe them, how they spread after we come back from a break. I'm Neil Conan. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Our guest is Nick DeFonso, an associate professor of psychology at the Rochester Institute of Technology. And we'll also be talking with somebody who's in charge of trying to stop rumors and seeing if any of those techniques work. But we'll be back after a short break. And again, this is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're talking today about rumors. Still with us is Nick DeFonso, an associate professor of psychology at the Rochester Institute of Technology, where he studies rumors. And let's get another caller on the line. Bob is with us. Bob from Louisville, Kentucky.
Yes, I was wondering if the professor's research showed whether certain individuals or groups are more gullible or susceptible to rumors.
That's a great question. The answer is all of us are gullible in some way, shape, or form. You would think that a less educated person might be more gullible to rumors, but that's actually probably not the case, although there's not been a lot of research that's been done on that particular idea. It's whatever makes sense to the particular group that you're part of. So I can think of a relatively educated group that's heard this false rumor called the Villejuif rumor. 43% of the French public at one time heard this rumor, and it's a false rumor that there's a substance in this soda pop that causes cancer. But it tended to be passed by a relatively educated group, people who were part of the consumerist movement.
Thanks, Bob.
Thank you.
Okay, and we're going to be talking. Let's talk with Michael. Michael with us from Phoenix, Arizona.
Hi, Neil. How are you this afternoon?
I'm well, thank you.
I have a unique situation where when I was in high school, my high school social studies teacher did kind of an experiment on rumors. He had a camera set up in the back of the room and staged a disagreement between myself and him that went out of the classroom, and had the class write down under the pretense that he needed it for the school board, without me in the room, have them write down what happened, and what came back. You know, of course, he had the videotape to substantiate what really happened.
Right.
But what came back on those pieces of paper were so far-fetched from the truth a lot of times, it was unbelievable. It was a real acknowledgement to how rumors get started.
Mm-hmm. And also a testament, I guess, Nick, to the credibility of eyewitnesses.
Yeah, and just how people tend to see things that they didn't really see.
Mm-hmm.
because a lot of the things that were written down were just completely to the left of truth.
Yes. Are there experiments like that are useful, Nick DeFonso?
The eyewitness testimony research is very useful in this regard, and I think what Mike has told us about is very interesting. You have a very interesting high school teacher there. There are memory limits, perceptual biases that occur when one is even observing an event and then writing it down. On the other hand, I would say that, say, in a court of law or in someone conducting a fair-minded investigation, they would collect all of those different transcripts, all of those different end reports that people wrote down, compare them all together, and they would stand a much better likelihood, since they're able to check one against the other, of sifting out a much more accurate story. And that's often what happens in these highly established, very close-knit organizational rumor settings, where oftentimes in those kinds of organizational settings, the rumors tend to be extremely accurate.
Michael, thanks very much for the call.
Thank you.
And joining us now is Fred Koenig, a professor of social psychology at Tulane University, a rumor consultant to companies that face a public relations crisis. He's with us by phone from his home in New Orleans. Nice to talk to you today.
Hi, I'm glad to be with you.
Is there any effective technique to stop rumors about a corporation's products?
Sure. Deny them. My theory about rumor control is that if the rumor's a problem, that's what you have to decide first. Is it a problem or isn't? If it is a problem, then you get on the media and use every source you can in terms of television, print, interviews, press conferences, and refute the rumor. Deny it as forcefully as you can.
Doesn't that risk just repeating the rumor again and again?
This does not. What this does, it takes the rumor, which is, a rumor is an unverified message. Okay, you take the rumor and you present it as news. It's no longer rumor, it's now news, which has a different dynamic. And the message of the news is that it's a false rumor. And so this will then get the message across that this rumor floating around, it's not true, it's unfair, that anybody who hears it and passes it on is gullible because it's not, you know, it is a deviant from the truth. And what this does, it affects the kind of people who like to pass rumors along.
Hmm.
Research has shown that people that tell rumors are usually the marginal people in the group, the ones that are not very popular. And so for a brief moment, if they come in with a sensational story, they get attention.
Mm-hmm. Nick,
once you make this thing known as being untrue, then nobody gets any attention for saying something. In fact, you lose some credibility because it's already been discounted.
Nick DeFonso, I know you've worked on I hate to cut you off, Professor Koenig, but I wanted to get to Nick one more time because we need to get to a breaking news story in just a moment. But I know you've worked on these sorts of things, too. Are the techniques that Mr. Koenig is talking about, do you think they're effective?
Absolutely. Absolutely. These techniques are very good, especially as Dr. Koenig mentioned, if it's a very serious rumor, then you ought to refute it. But I would add one more thing, and that is that you ought to do a good job at refuting it. It's not simply that Bob Talbert is not part of the mafia. You can't simply issue a denial, but you have to offer a context such as there are these malicious rumors being spread about by people who are trying for pecuniary reasons, and they are not true. Mm-hmm. And here's why they're not true. And in fact, even in earthquake rumor situations, if you can establish a trusted third-party independent source that will then issue a point-by-point rebuttal of the rumor, then some of the research has shown that that's very effective in countering these rumors.
I'm afraid we're going to have to cut it off there. Fred Koenig, I know we've given you a short shrift today. We'll try to do better next time.
Okay, well, it was a pleasure talking to you.
Nice to talk to you. Fred Koenig, a professor of social psychology at Tulane, and he joined us by phone from his home in New Orleans. Nick DeFonso, thank you very much for your time today.
My pleasure.
Nick DeFonso, an associate professor of psychology at Rochester Institute of Technology, and he was with us from the studios of our member station there, WXXI, in Rochester, New York.